It is Jerusalem, the holy city, and it is the year 69 of the Common Era. Just a few years earlier, in June of 66, a revolution has thrown the hated Roman occupiers out of the city. And somehow, miraculously, when the Roman army returns in November of that year to siege and to retake the city, they are turned back, beaten all the way to the coast with bands of guerrillas harassing them on their way. Hallelujah, God's kingdom, it has come. Well, no, for the liberation is short-lived. The empire does not intend to lose this or any territory. And so the greatest general of his day, Vespasian, is dispatched to quell this insurrection. Gathering troops from around the Mediterranean, from North Africa, Turkey, Greece, the Roman army is over 6,000 strong as they crushed smaller Jewish forces in the Galilee. They march on Jerusalem in June of 68, and the city prepares for the worst. Once again, though, Jerusalem is spared. You see, civil war has broken out in Rome, and with Nero dead, several military leaders are vying to become emperor. Vespasian is called back to Rome by his supporters to take part in the battle for control of the empire. In Jerusalem, they rejoice. Has God once again intervened? Is this the beginning of the new kingdom of Israel? No. Once more, the Roman Empire has something more at stake than a sliver of hill country hard against the Mediterranean. The empire is determined to show these zealots and all of the outposts of the empire that Rome will have the final word. They will return. So can you imagine what it might have been like to be a faithful Jew living in and around Jerusalem at this time? What the pressure must have been, right? You have the crushing might of Rome looming on one side, and the fiery zeal of these rebels on the other. You can almost sense the fever pitch that is rising. This is it, they say, the battle to end all battles, one that will restore the fortunes of Zion. David's line will reign again in our holy city. Stand up, be counted, gird your loins, for the day is approaching. This is our chance, brothers and sisters. Israel will rise once more. And so it is in this moment, in the year 69, with Jerusalem teetering on the brink, with all of this as the social political backdrop, that many scholars believe that this first evangel, or this gospel according to Mark, was written right here. Now, Vespasian did indeed return to Rome, right? He won those battles for supremacy. He was crowned emperor. And then he did send one of his best generals, Titus, to finish this unfinished business of the previous year. And so the full strength of the despised Roman Empire descended on the holy city, Jerusalem. What was a disciple of this Jesus Christ to do? Was this the end? Is now the moment? How are we to respond? How would you respond? It appears to us now that this nascent community of the followers of Jesus was torn. And so to address this time of crisis and the times of crisis that will surely follow, it may well be that this gospel account of Mark was written. There were assuredly those in and around Jerusalem who saw this revolt and the approaching battle with the Roman army in the year 70 as the fulfillment of the scriptures, this divinely appointed clash that would bring the Messiah, the anointed one, and would usher in the new age of Israel. And it may well be that members of the Jesus movement took part in that armed rebellion. There are many who believe that this is why our passage this morning from Mark's gospel was written. For this very reason, when it warns the community to not be led astray. Mark writes, "Many will come in my name. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes, there will be famines. Do not be led astray." Now, when we hear that word, astray, in our translation, know that the literal understanding of the Greek is to not wander off the path. To not wander off the path. In this case, to wander off the path leads into the wilderness, into danger. "Beware," says the Good Shepherd. Now, what we do know is that the zealots and those who took part in the insurrection against Rome were crushed later in the fall of the year 70. The reports of that siege and the resulting death and destruction are staggering. They are almost impossible to comprehend. And the temple that Jesus talks about, that marble and gold wonder, it came down. Not stone by stone, but burnt, leveled, destroyed, and has never since been rebuilt. What we are left with are these words of Jesus about a revealing of what is to come. It's like through this version of the good news, Jesus, the living teacher, continues to speak to his followers. As confusion mounts, as fear grips the streets, Jesus' words to this early Markan community and to us now are to stay the path, even as chaos may rise around us. Stay the path. It is Norwich, England, and the year is 1395 of the Common Era. It is the east of England, and we are now almost 60 years into what is going to be known as the Hundred Years' War. Now, to put this into a kind of perspective, imagine someone born that year in 1395. Their grandparents and their parents and their potential children and their potential grandchildren, all of them will know nothing but war. They will know of crushing taxes that are needed to pay for this endless war. Famine is episodic. The Black Death has already ravaged Europe in two cycles, killing nearly one quarter of the entire population, one in four. The reverberations of the peasants' revolt of 1381 still hang in the air. This revolt that tore apart society, that resulted in the deaths of thousands and thousands of English. And in the midst of this chaos and crisis, an anchorite, a remarkable mystic, author, and solitary, Julian of Norwich, begins to write about her showings, these revelations that she has received from God about the nature of life. What she wrote and counseled others about in her decades living in a small cell within the walls of a church has encouraged Christians ever since. And the primary revelation that she reflected on for the remainder of her life comes to us in these words: that all shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. Now, first, and especially at times like these, words like this can seem at best thin and at worst naive. Laughably naive. Does Julian know what we are faced with? no and yes. Because remember, friends, these words were offered by someone whose family had been decimated by plague, whose world was racked by war and revolt, who was surrounded by violence and uncertainty. But even all this, and through all this, Julian perceived a truth that suffused life. That Christ, in her words, He, our Mother, embraces all, is with us all. And that our response as followers of Christ is to carry this light into the darkness. It is not that pain and suffering will be eliminated, but it is not for us to stand aside. In fact, we are to remain, to hold our ground, to stay behind. It's just that we have a belief, a trust, that it all doesn't rest on our shoulders, or that we are alone as we take our faithful part. Stay the path. All shall be well. And we are here in Berkeley, California, and it is the year 2015 of the Common Era. And we come to worship this morning with our hearts freshly broken. Now, there are times when entering into apocalyptic literature can be challenging. This day is not one of them. With war raging in Syria and Iraq, the downing of Flight 9268 from Egypt to Russia 2 weeks ago, the bombings in Beirut, Lebanon on Thursday, and the horrific attacks in Paris on Friday, we look at the world around us and wonder, is this what the end looks like? We are once again shocked at the hate-filled, seemingly indiscriminate destruction of those who use terror and tyranny in an attempt to rule. And part of our pain this day comes as we encounter the suffering and the grief of those whose lives are lost and of those whose lives have been shattered. And part of our pain comes from what the scholar Roger Nishioka has called our loss of innocence. I experienced this once again firsthand this weekend when we talked about these attacks in Paris with our boys. Our family in Paris, aunts and uncles and cousins, they are safe, but there are many families who are not. And sharing this with our boys was, for me, like losing that sense of innocence all over again. I mean, we lived in New York in September of 2001. I have known this before. But each and every time this happens and the fragility of life is exposed and the ability of humankind to inflict wanton destruction is revealed, I wonder, can this really be the way of the world? Is there an end? How long must this be? Mark's gospel does not give us an easy ending. It ends with an open tomb with terror and amazement seizing the women who had the courage to remain. And yet, friends, they had the courage to remain. And this is where I am this morning, joining with Dorothy Bernard when she said that courage is fear that has said its prayers. Courage is fear that has said its prayers. I come this morning with sighs too deep for words and with the book of Hebrews to guide my steps. I come following the witness in Paris of many and of those in our own states who have acted under those hashtags Porte Ouverte and Stranded in US, with those who have offered their whole hearts and their homes, sheltering many in the mayhem of these last few days. Right? People who sprinted towards the gunfire to care for people. For it's in these last few verses from this passage that I believe we are to live from, especially when it seems like this day is close. Let us hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who has promised is faithful, the author writes. And let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. Now, many of you have heard me share a particular definition of courage. I came across it thanks to the scholar and author Brené Brown. The root of the word courage, she reminds us, actually comes from Old French. For at the core of the word courage is cœur, or heart. And it seems to me, friends, that to live faithfully amidst the birth pangs is to encourage one another, to give heart to one another. This is not something that we do alone or we do on our own as a people. Indeed, at times like these, as the biblical scholar Ched Myers teaches us, the coming of the kingdom has nothing to do with triumphalism. It comes from below, in solidarity with the human family in its dark night of suffering. God only knows where this all leads, but may this be our way forward, to stay the path, to take heart with one another, that all shall be well.